This is Ozarks at Large. The Republican Party will be in the majority in the Arkansas Senate next month when the legislature convenes. It's the first time the GOP has been in the majority in the chamber since Reconstruction. The president-elect of the Senate, Michael Lamoureux, is a Republican from Russellville. He recently sat down with Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business, to talk about what the 21-14 Republican majority will mean for the Arkansas Senate.
Let's talk about the margins that you have in the state Senate, I guess, is a little bit of an advantage from a leadership perspective. You've got 21 Republicans, 14 Democrats. Come and tell me what that does for you in terms of your ability to kind of push through an agenda that you might be pursuing.
Well, it's almost the exact opposite of what we had last session with 20 Democrats and 15 Republicans. But the thing I think a lot of people overlook is in the Senate, the power of the minority. And so although it's 21-14, the 14 has quite a bit of authority. And so we'll be working together on all important issues.
Going to have a lot of, you've had a lot of turnover in the state Senate in the past couple of years. Kind of walk me through what the lay of the land, the landscape has been there, and what you're looking at over the next 4, 5, 6 years.
In the last 4 years, the state Senate has lost 28 members due to term limits or occasionally the incumbent losing an election. In the next 2 years, no member of the state Senate will be term limited. In the next 4 years, 2 members will be term limited. In the next 6 years, only 6 members will be term limited. So the group we have now, a group of 35, for better or worse, is going to be the group that Arkansas has for the most part for the next 6 to 10 years.
We're going to have to vote you guys out of office if we don't like the job that you're doing, is what you're telling us,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. We're not just going to go away on our own.
All right. Let's talk about what you've been doing in pre-session activity. One of the things that I've talked to a lot of members about you, and I've talked about it, is that you've got a bunch of senators in working groups kind of developing policy strategy, thinking about things. Tell me what you've been doing in terms of combining people and putting people in these different groups and what you're trying to achieve.
Well, we have 15 new members, and so a lot of them, about I think 11 of them came from the House, so they have previous experience. But it's really difficult when you come off of a tough November election. You have the holidays, and then on January 14th, we start doing our work, and essentially, we only have 60 to 90 days to get it done. So if you don't get a head start, the first month of the session really is kind of wasted. So we're trying to get a lot of things that we can agree upon done. Big issues like Medicaid, trying to get an understanding of the issue early so that on January 14th, it's not just a ceremonial day, but we actually start working on the first day of the session.
Give me an example of something not Medicaid related where this working group structure that you put in place is doing something that you feel like you'll be able to on day one do what you want to do.
One example is as president of the Senate, you appoint members to the Lottery Oversight Committee, and as you probably see in the news quite a bit, there's a lot of issues about lottery scholarships, and normally those appointments wouldn't be made until the first day of the session. I've went ahead and contacted the 6 members that I intend to appoint and let them know that I intend for them to be on the committee and ask that they go ahead and start working on those issues so that they can have something to present, hopefully pretty early on in the session. And really with each different subject area, we're trying to do the same thing, let people know where they're going to be and what the big issues are, and asking them to kind of work on those and kind of keep the rest of us in the loop. And similar thing with education, although that's not my appointment. Kind of leaning on the education committee members with the Supreme Court ruling and other education issues, and then ask them to kind of in turn keep the rest of the senators in the loop with what's going on.
Now, if you want to break some news about some appointments you're planning on making, I'd be more than happy to let you go ahead and do that now if you want
I asked Robert Thompson if he'd be willing to chair lottery oversight, and he was willing to do that, and I think that'll be really good. I thought it was important that we have a returning member and somebody with a lot of experience and kind of a blend of higher education background and budget background is really important. So I don't know how widely that's known, but he's agreed to do that, and I'm excited that he's doing that.
All right, you mentioned Medicaid. We got a lot of issues that we could talk about. Medicaid, tax reform, education. Medicaid's going to be the dominant issue. This past week we learned something that we already suspected, and that was that it's going to be all or nothing on the Medicaid expansion if we want to do it in Arkansas. You have said that that does not kill the deal for you. Why do you feel that way?
Well, the federal government said quite a few things in the course of rolling out the Affordable Care Act that later on turned out not to be true. So one, I'm hoping this is another one of those. My position the whole time has been, if we can get what I like to refer to as an Arkansas plan or Arkansas agreement, bipartisan in the legislature with the cooperation of the governor, that we're going to sort of lean on him to sell it to the federal officials. I mean, there's a lot of back and forth there. I think that there's really no way to have one size fits all Medicaid policy. At the end of the day, I have to think that they're going to look to the chief executive of the state about what will work for Arkansas. And I think what works here is going to be different than what works in California or New York. And I'm hoping that he's willing to view that negotiation the same way.
Well, he probably is. You've talked to him about it. I'm sure he would be willing to do that. And he and Kathleen Sebelius have a pretty good working relationship. They're the head of the Human Services Division at federal level.
Hopefully we can leverage that to our benefit.
These are two separate issues, but they are going to get intertwined in this session, and that is we have a Medicaid shortfall currently and projected, and then you have the Medicaid expansion, which state administrative officials have said could be a key to helping us close that budget gap in the long run. What does a Medicaid solution look like to you?
Well, when they say that, I think that may be true in the short term. I mean, if the state went out and did a full Medicaid expansion and took all the, you know, the financial benefits that came with that, it's probably true that we could, on the short term, you know, solve the shortfall that we have. But I think we have an obligation to look at what healthcare is going to look like in Arkansas over the next 10 or 20 years. And in the first 3 years, they pay for all of that. The number they've offered us is that after that, the state would be responsible for 10%, and there's talk that percentage may change. And really, we need to know those kind of things before we make that 10 or 20 year commitment. We need to know what price tag we're agreeing to, and we need some firm answers from the federal government before we make long-term budget decisions based on, you know, what they're telling us.
What happens if you can't get those long-term commitments or that long-term solution? Does Medicaid go undealt with in this session?
I think then we back up from a more large global agreement to backing up and probably trying to look at just solving the current shortfall in our current system. I mean, I think it'd be very difficult to agree to add 250,000 people to our Medicaid rolls, where there's currently close to 800,000 people on right now, without being able to tell the taxpayers, you know, how much of that we're going to be paying for.
Could you see this session a healthy debate on Medicaid reform, healthy debate on some changes to the Medicaid program, but not getting the answers that you need? Maybe having to break and come back and do a special session with Medicaid.
I really could see that, and you know, we're on a different timeline than the federal government, and we have, you know, a 60-day session. If we have an agreement, we can extend it, but we can't stay in session indefinitely. And so, if you know, I don't suspect the whole world will revolve around the Arkansas calendar. And so, if those things aren't resolved at a federal level, we may have to, you know, do a short-term fix and come back and address it long-term needs later on. I hope not, but that could happen.
Let's move to tax reform. There's been a couple of different tax reform items that have been discussed so far. The governor wants to continue this elimination of the grocery tax down to as much as he possibly can. Constitutionally, there's talk of income tax reform. There's been capital gains tax cuts or elimination in the past. We've got targeted business and manufacturing tax cuts that are going to be presented. What's realistic? What's the priority for you on tax reform?
My priority is really a bipartisan and both chambers and the governor coming to an agreement and getting a deal done. I don't have a particular bill that I'm pushing. I'm not extremely supportive of the trigger mechanism the governor rolled out, but I would like to see us continue to reduce the grocery tax cut. Mm-hmm. I don't know if a full reduction is possible during this session. The House has spent a lot of effort looking at income tax reform, and I suspect that's going to be their priority. And then the Senate, our members tend to be more about maybe manufacturing or something that would be directly related to jobs. So I think maybe some combination of those three things. The process really is to get Medicaid resolved first, have a good idea about the budget, and then figure out what number we could afford to cut, and then how we're going to divide that among the various
but
tax cuts.
But Medicaid might not get decided, so you may have to deal with some of this tax policy without that.
That's possible. Mm-hmm. We're really going to have to let that play out first to know exactly how to handle that and what order.
What's your problem with the trigger mechanism that the governor's proposed?
I just think that I like something more direct. If we decide that it's good tax policy to cut the grocery tax and we want to cut it by a certain amount, I would rather us make that decision than let that happen based on some event outside our control, a court case being resolved or some other factor. I prefer just a simpler approach.
Michael Amaro will be the next president of the Arkansas Senate when the legislature convenes next month. He is a Republican from Russellville. He talked with Ropey Brock from our content partner, Talk Business. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com.
And Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon Communications store near you or online at vzw.com/small business. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at cegpartners.com.
For many of us, the best part of the holidays is the chance to see old friends or to hear them. For several decades now, Paul Winter has made our holidays brighter with his winter consort and musical guests at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. I'm John Schaefer. Join us for the performance, Paul Winter's 32nd Winter Solstice Celebration from NPR Music.
The Paul Winter Solstice Concert can be heard Friday morning at 10 on KUAF 91.3 FM.